How real is the threat of bioterrorism, and specifically anthrax? I know that many of you have a lot of questions about that today, and we have two experts here to answer as many of them as possible. Please welcome Craig Gundry with the Palladium Media Group. He's an expert in counterterrorism and biochemical warfare. And Dr. Julia Gill, she has a PhD and a master's in public health, and she is the epidemiology program manager for the Pinellas County Health Department. Welcome, both of you. What are either of you hearing that's new today about the two cases of anthrax down in Palm Beach County?
Today I've heard that nothing has changed in Palm Beach. There haven't been any additional cases, and also the cultures that they did in the last 2 days on 722 employees and visitors that were in that building during from August 1st on, the cultures haven't returned yet, so we don't know if there are any additional people that have that organism.
Okay. Now, we're hearing, though, that the new news today that the strain that they have was genetically modified. Okay. Craig, does this give you more of a hint that this is more likely criminal action?
If it was genetically modified.
And or terrorism.
Well,
okay.
Absolutely. Whether it would be terrorist or criminal, though, at this point, there's not enough information to really begin to speculate.
Those are two different things, you think?
Well, when we say terrorist, we're typically talking about somebody with an ideological motive versus somebody with a purely criminal motive, perhaps revenge or whatever the case might be. Most of what we have seen regarding anthrax, with the exception of Aum Shinrikyo, in the mid-1990s, over the past 10 years, as far as threats, et cetera, have all been criminally related or perpetrated by right-wing idealists, you know, targeting women's health clinics, et cetera.
You know, a lot of people are panicking over this, and one of the things that we're trying to do today is to hopefully tell them not to panic, because I know I've been hearing all over the radios people are asking their doctors for, give me some antibiotics to hold in my house in case I need it and I'm exposed, or give me some of that Cipro. I've been hearing about what that Cipro is. Okay, is that dangerous for doctors to be prescribing that and for people to be asking for it now?
I think it is. I think it is. And the
Why?
Reason is because different organisms have different sensitivities.
I see. So
plus,
so just having
there
one
are certain strains that respond to different antibiotics differently.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's been reported that the Iraqis even developed an antibiotic-resistant strain. So you really need to be tested out to know exactly what it is that you have in order to get a proper treatment prescribed.
Because it strikes me that the danger here is that people just start popping antibiotics because they think they might have been exposed to something, but it's not for what they've been exposed to, then it creates even more of the problem of being developing a resistance in our society to antibiotics.
Absolutely.
Kelly from Sebring, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today?
Okay.
I got a few questions. First, they're saying to, you know, prepare a safe room in your home. And how should you do that, and how long would you have to stay in the safe room? And another question is, the exposure to rain and sun is supposed to destroy anthrax after a few hours. How come it can live in drinking water and streams?
Mm-hmm.
And the last question is, what are they spraying on these CDC workers as they come out of these buildings?
Okay, we got three questions there. The first one is that he's heard you should have a safe room in your house. What's that for, and should everybody have one?
I haven't heard anybody recommending safe rooms. Mm-hmm. When it comes to chemical and biological terrorism or chemical and biological attacks, buildings do not provide very good protection in general, especially aerosolized agents can still penetrate inside of a building.
Mm.
As far as having a safe room, if there was a substantial threat of the employment, I would recommend at least having a plan for some location where one could take refuge if it was believed that there was an attack was imminent or that the building might become exposed to an aerosol. And there's specific ways of actually sealing that room up, which I'm not going to get into.
But you can't just, most people can't very well just designate, okay, let's all go to the second bathroom
and to address the second issue, sunlight for an extended period of time, Bacillus anthracis is a very hardy organism.
And what is that?
Anthrax.
Terms. Anthrax,
okay. I'm sorry. Is a very hardy organism by comparison to other types of bacteria. And it requires at least 20 minutes of steam under pressure in order to kill it. I think it's maybe 2 hours exposure to sunlight or more in order to kill it as well. And as far as water, I'm not aware of water killing it. To my knowledge, Bacillus anthracis can still survive in water.
Okay.
As far as decontamination is concerned, there's a lot of different things that can be used. Everything from water with chlorine. If it's your body, hot soapy water, lots of it, copious amounts, and just continue washing. Formalin is commonly used also.
So what are they probably using in these situations where people have been seeing on the news that people have been sprayed down? What are they likely using? Do you have any idea?
That's probably mostly hot soapy water. Mm-hmm. Okay. And also in some cases, depending upon what it is also, okay. If you see like clothes right. and gloves and stuff, that'll probably also be chlorine, bleach, and water.
Okay, Frank and Bradenton, go ahead.
Yes, I seem to be getting mixed messages. The media seems to be reporting that there's not a great deal of concern. There shouldn't be a great deal of concern about mass exposure due to airborne anthrax, since it's difficult to produce, and that the spores need to be extracted. If the spores are too big, they won't float in the air. If they're too small, they won't go into the nares. If that's true, why then was there such massive inoculation of our troops during the Gulf War?
If I may?
Go ahead.
Because Iraq, as a state actor, had produced anthrax and produced large quantities of it. Iraq was probably one of the most aggressive states in terms of developing chemical and biological munitions. And given the fact that anthrax was a large part of their BW program, their biological warfare program, it was appropriate for us to inoculate or to prepare our troops to deal with that type of situation. In this particular case, when we're talking about a non-state actor, we're talking about a terrorist or a criminal, it's very, very difficult to produce a dry agent of a sufficient size. You've got to remember, just because you create a dry agent doesn't mean that it's going to suspend well and float around the air. It's got to be a certain size, which requires it to be ground down. To do that without killing the bacteria is a science all in it within itself. So generally speaking, we would say that technology is very, very difficult for a non-state actor, which would kind of exclude that as being a substantial threat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to take a break, and one of the things that, that both of them have been telling me is historically whether or not attempts to use anthrax as a weapon have been successful or not. If you don't know the answer to that, it might make you feel a little better about all of this, and we'll talk to Scott in Winter Haven when we come back.